Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. One of the biggest problems with the Book of Mormon is that Native Americans don't seem to descend from Israelites, but rather Asians. There's also a big problem with archaeology. A lot of things don't match what we know about archaeology in North America. How does Heartland expert Jonathan Neville react to this? Check out our conversation. Well, here, let's go. Let's turn this in a little bit of a different direction.
Yeah.
Of course, there are critics, Thomas Murphy, Simon Southerton, even Hugo Perego. I wouldn't call him a critic, but they talk about DNA.
Right.
Now, I know Rod has what I would view as a very unscientific way to handle that.
Right.
And it was interesting to read what you said. In a lot of ways, you, I would say, kind of embrace the limited geography theory, the meso theory, as far as the Nephite numbers were small. There were lots of Native Americans here before, right. So you're just not going to find traces of DNA. And I will say, Thomas recently was on Mormon Book Reviews with Steve Pineacre.
Right.
And one of the things that he said, which really surprised me, he kind of embraced Heartland in the fact that this is kind of the environment Joseph grew up in.
Right.
He saw these mound builder myths. And so the Book of Mormon is an embellishment, I guess, from Thomas's point of view,
right,
of these mound builder myths. And so he does agree with you that Joseph did view the Hopewell people as the Book of Mormon people.
Right.
The criticism is, where's the Cohen DNA? It's not there.
Yeah.
And I also love to point out the Lemba tribe in Africa. For those who are not familiar, there's a black African tribe in South Africa that claimed they were descendants of Israel. They're black people.
Right.
They did a DNA test, and sure enough,
that's right,
they have Cohen DNA. They have Israelite DNA.
Right.
And so that tends to cause a problem with Book of Mormon proponents,
right,
and I don't care whether you're Heartland, Mezzo, Baja, no matter what, any theory that you propose in America,
right,
it's Asian DNA, it's not
right,
Israelite DNA. So how do you respond to that?
Okay, I respond to that two ways. First, in Joseph, in the Wentworth letter, he said it was inhabited, America, I think he said, was inhabited by two civilizations, the Jaredites and the Lehites, let's say, which would include the people of Mulek. And the way I understand the Jaredites is they came over, I believe they crossed the Pacific after traversing Asia. And it was Jared and his brother and their friends, right? They didn't say where their friends came from. But presumably they were friendly enough to pick up some Asians with them, you know. And so when they crossed over, I think they landed up in British Columbia area. Now, there's a native tribe up there that's their tradition, that their ancestors came on tight ships and they had glowing pearls inside. And that was just a Native American tradition, you know, origin story. And that fits. I think it makes sense. And so then they landed here and it said they spread out everywhere. And when they did their census a few years later, they only had Jared and his brother. They didn't talk about all their friends. So I infer from that the friends took off even farther away. And so Jared and his brother hung out still, presumably not too far from where they landed, let's say Seattle area, somewhere up in there. And then based on Ether's genealogy, you know, he had 33 plus generations of people by the time he got to New York, where he was. So they crossed over the Great Lakes, spread out throughout the United States, all the way down Central and South America. So my and I've seen studies. There's one published paper that says the Native Americans traveled kind of to British Columbia and then north towards Alaska instead of coming over the Bering Strait, which would imply a waterway to get here, like the Jaredites did. And, you know, there's lots of ambiguity about exactly whether they crossed the Bering Strait or not. So my interpretation of it is the Jaredites had Asian DNA, they brought over during their travels, and they spread throughout the Americas. And there could have been other people from Asia as well, but the Jaredite migration satisfies the Asian to me. And that's because the only Jaredites that the Book of Ether talks about were his ancestors in New York. So I have no problem with Asian DNA. I think it's consistent with the Book of Mormon. As far as Lehi and Mulek, we don't know their ancestry, as Ugo's pointed out. We know they came from the area of Jerusalem. Whether they were had the X2 haplotype or not, you know, that's the big controversy, is when did the X2 haplotype break off? Because anybody can look on Wikipedia or the journals behind it and see that there's a concentration around Israel and a concentration in the northeastern United States. I mean, that's just a fact. And even Ugo acknowledges that. He's just saying,
Thomas said it's also in Africa.
Well, yeah, but of course, people migrated around. Mm-hmm. But the concentrations of it, where the native peoples that they've done the surveys of, is the highest concentration is around Israel and northeastern United States. Actually, it should be backwards from your perspective. So the entire issue, as I understand it, and I'm not a DNA expert, but I read Ugo's papers. I've talked to Ugo about this. I've read Rod's book, and I understand that the primary difference of opinion between them is when the X2 broke off into the smaller haplotype, X2A, B, or whatever. And Ugo, of course, says it happened, you know, long before Lehi.
10,000 years ago.
Yeah. But he also says that the first Americans, first people came to America around 70,000 years ago, something like that.
Right.
So basically the Darwinian theory of evolution is what he teaches. And I'm, you know, I don't know. I wasn't there. All I can go by is what science tells us. But I've seen enough science to know that it's always subject to change. So what Ugo says today, he may not say 2 years from now because there's additional discoveries coming out. What Rod says today, he may not say 2 years from now because of additional discoveries. So in my mind, the whole thing is still, I mean, certainly most DNA experts side with Ugo's perspective. But that's it's not a fact in the sense that it's set in stone. It's still subject to continual refinement and understanding. And it's all based on this idea that human evolution, let's say, is on a consistent time period, never changes. You know, it's a pattern. You can go back because of the fossils and so on. Rod's perspective is that evolution, or at least I shouldn't say evolution, mutations happen much faster than what Ugo is saying. And that explains why this X2 haplotype change happened more recently than Ugo is saying. And I don't know any way to reconcile that myself. I know most of the experts are on Ugo's side, but that's kind of circular reasoning because he learned from those experts. He thinks in that context. That's the only way he can think about it because that's how he's been trained, that's what he's been teaching. It's the same reason we have Mesoamerica being taught because they can't think outside that box. Rod can't think outside of his box either, right? Because he's convinced that's how it is.
Because Rod's more of a young earth creationist.
Yeah. Right.
Anti-evolution,
right.
Which for a lot of people that believe in science, that's going to be a huge turn off.
See, I have to take issue with your term there, because I don't think Rod doesn't believe in science. And it's kind of like there's a lot of scientific issues that are more political.
Well, Rod's trying to change the science, and he's not a scientist. I mean, he admitted that recently.
No one said he was a scientist. You said believe in science. And I think Rod believes in science. And I think
a lot of people would say pseudoscience.
They can say that. You know, people say everything. But I think it's poor, inaccurate framing to have believe in science versus not believe in science. I don't think that's a legitimate dichotomy. Because you can believe...
Well, he questions carbon dating, which... really hard for,
I've talked to actual people in the field who question carbon dating as well, not just Rod, but people in that field. I wish I could name names, but everybody's afraid to come out and say what they think because they get hammered at their work. It's like at BYU, you try to come out and talk about the heartland, you get creamed by these guys at Book of Mormon Central and their peers on the faculty. So I've been contacted by Heartlanders at BYU who don't want to say anything. They say, please don't use my name. You know, I'm with you on this, but I don't want anybody to know this is what I think. I could real easily delve into names and situations, but I've had church leaders similar. They don't want to say, keep doing what you're doing. I've had employees from downtown in the church office building contact me, say, we love what you're doing. Keep doing it. You got to get this fixed because it's a disaster. But I can't say who they are, obviously, because they're in this kind of a corporate world that the church history department has embraced, or at least accommodates, you know, Mesoamerica. And even the Joe Smith papers, it's all full of Mesoamerican references and stuff that aren't historical, but they put them in there anyway. And so it's a situation where I certainly don't say I don't believe in church history, because I do. That's what I'm relying on. And I'm not going to say I don't believe in science. But like I said earlier, I trust but verify, right? And so I tend to see Ugo's point. I think I understand his point. I've read his papers.
Well, I mean, you would kind of agree with Ugo in the fact that if the Nephites are a small group and they've got millions of Asian DNA, and you assimilate into here, the Lehite DNA is going to disappear.
Actually, I don't agree with
you. Don't agree with that.
I mean, it's a numbers game. You know, you can run numbers.
Because I thought that's what I read in here.
Well, no, I think I pointed out that that's a point of view more than, than that's what I think. I'm happy to articulate the best I can what Ugo thinks and what Rod thinks. And it's like I am with the geography. I mean, I don't know myself. I'm just saying this is what makes the most sense to me. And on the DNA issue, because the Lord designated those Indian tribes in New York and Ohio as Lamanites, I think they are Lamanites. I really do think there's a descendancy, let's say. How much it shows up in DNA is hard to tell. They've tested very few of the Hopewell bones, I mean, very few. And it's very, as you know, it's difficult to even acquire bones that are found because of the NAGPRA, what is it called, the Native American Protection Act, whatever it is, where you can't just, oh, I dug up some bones, I'm going to go get them tested. You have to go through the tribes, and there's arguments about who they belong to. I mean, doing anthropology right now in North America is very difficult because of the various constraints, and they're all understandable, but the bottom line is you can't really get good DNA analysis of most of it. So there's these limited databases that they use. So I would expect, I'd say if I had to choose between Rod and Ugo, I would say Rod's is more consistent, definitely more consistent with the scriptures, his Doctrine and Covenants and what Joseph taught. Joseph said the remnant are the Indians that live in this country, so I wouldn't be looking for the Indians that live outside of the country. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I have no problem with Latin American, Asian DNA. That, to me, that's Book of Mormon teaching, too, because of the Jaredites. And the other issue we're dealing with is post-Book of Mormon times, because after the Nephite battles, I would expect Mayans to have migrated up here back and forth, and so you'd have a mixture of DNA, even including Asian DNA from the Mayans in North America and vice versa. But I still think that when you look at that X2 haplotype map and you see that concentration of it, I understand the technical reason why that change had to happen long before Lehi came here. But that's all based on a bunch of assumptions as well. And it's not based on fact, it's based on assumptions and interpretations. And based on my experience with people interpreting things, you know, interpreting the Book of Mormon, and it becomes doctrine that is a narrow strip of mountainous wilderness, I don't buy the assumptions. I want to know what the facts are. And I think there's still room. I think we'll have more discoveries with DNA that'll validate what the Book of Mormon teaches. I know what Thomas Murphy says, and I know what Dan Vogel and all those guys say about the mound builder. And I think Oliver Cowdery attempted to address that in Letter 7, because he said that this was not the righteous being killed by the wicked, which was kind of the mound builder myth, right? And it was not a white race being killed by a dark race. That's not what the Book of Mormon says. You might be interested in this. Years ago, when I first got into this, I'd read Dan Vogel's book about the Indian origins of, you know, mm-hmm. and Thomas Murphy's stuff and all that, and I thought, okay, those are good points. And so I did a, I actually wrote a book, I never published it, about how the Book of Mormon is contradicts the Mound Builder theory. And maybe it's time to do it, I don't know. But I read those and I thought, you know, they're making good points. I'm willing to read anybody's comment about anything. I watch John DeLynn stuff sometimes. And I, to me, words aren't offensive. I don't get upset by what someone says, you know. And so I just want to know what they think. So the Mound Builder myth is a fairly cohesive set of ideas that were prevalent in Joseph's day, you know, view of the Hebrews and all that kind of stuff. And the Book of Mormon contradicts it at almost every point. And that's where I think Bogle and Murphy are a little loose with their analysis. They kind of say, well, I was just adopting Mound Builder theory. No, it wasn't. And the way I look at it is, if the Book of Mormon is true, and it really did happen where Moroni said it did, you know, and those mounds that Joseph crossed were evidence of his defined authenticity, then the Mound Builder myth would have been built on the reality that the Book of Mormon teaches. In other words, the Book of Mormon is the actual truth about the origins of those Mound Builders. But people didn't have the Book of Mormon to read, so they concocted these mythology and myth on top of what the evidence that they could see. And so the Mound Builder is a myth, but it's based on the truth of the Book of Mormon. That's how I see it.
And, well, I mean, the other issue is, getting away from the DNA a little bit, you know, pretty much Joseph Smith saw the Indians, they were using guns and pistols and horses and things. But before the Spanish arrived, the Indians were pretty much Stone Age technologically. There was no wheels.
Book of Mormon
they didn't use
wheels.
Swords.
Well, swords, yeah.
Chariots.
Okay.
A temple like unto Solomon.
Right.
So there's a lot of the Indians pre-Spanish don't match what the Book of Mormon says.
Well, I should say our perception of what the Indians were pre-Spanish doesn't match. But if you've read, what's that book? I don't know if it's Guns, Germs, and Steel or 1491. One of those popular books about anthropology and archaeology. They say that somewhere upwards of 90% of the Native Americans were killed off by when the Europeans came.
Right.
And DeSoto talked about seeing all these vast civilizations, you know, that were empty because of the smallpox and so on. And so there was a lot more sophistication involved than we inherited from our interaction with the Native Americans, because by the time the, you know, the West was developed, or they had the Indian Act in 1830 where they kicked them all out of the eastern United States, by then they weren't building these vast geometric designed mounds that we see in Ohio, you know, the Hopewell stuff. Mm-hmm. They had stopped building that stuff a long time ago. So there was a time when they were more, I hate to say sophisticated, but at least they were more organized, let's say, because they had to be well organized to do these massive geometric shapes that they repeated over hundreds of miles. They had to be able to communicate. They had to be... Recently in Ohio, they pointed out that in order for them to align these things the way they are, they had to be at large distances away and somehow communicate how to line things up and how to organize it and all. Mm-hmm. So there was a point, and the archaeology shows us, where the Hopewell, let's say, were more better organized, is the only term I can think of, than they were by the time the Europeans came. So there's a basis for this higher civilization concept. Now, as far as chariots, who knows what a chariot is? Was it a handheld thing?
Well, you would think Nephi would know, with living in Jerusalem, that he would know what a chariot was, right?
I don't know if it was Nephi that called them chariots.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Jonathan Neville, a Heartland expert. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about the translation of the Book of Mormon.
Any evidence of Joseph as having composed the Book of Mormon is also evidence that he translated it. And this is such a basic point. Any evidence of composition is evidence of translation. The reason I say that is a translator can only use his own lexicon. You know, like this little book here, this is my African illustrated church history book. Mm-hmm. We translate it into French and Spanish. And get it in French and Spanish now. And I did some of the translation because I speak French pretty fluently, right? But I only could use terms and syntax that I knew already from my ability to speak French.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents for just $5 a month. Patreon is spelled patreon.com/gospeltangents. If you'd like to watch the entire video, you can subscribe at YouTube, Patreon, or on my website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button for just $8 a month. PDF transcripts are just $10 a month, and you can get those on patreon.com/gospeltangents or on my website. I'll send those to you as soon as I've finished completing it. If you'd like to get a paperback and PDF, just subscribe for $20 a month at either Patreon or on my website. Individual paperbacks are available at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents interview, and you can find all of our past interviews there. Show your Gospel Tangents pride by purchasing a t-shirt on our website at gospeltangents.com/shop. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. You can get our latest updates by friending me at Facebook, or you can also follow our page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Become an insider and you can see the newest videos. Follow us on Twitter at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.